WDEL News. Back to more two-way talk live and local here on WDEL.
Imagine this. One court case could cause your taxes to go up exponentially here in Delaware. One court case could actually cause Delaware to lose a huge chunk of the 25% of revenue the state brings in from incorporation fees, chancery court. One case can do that. And you're about to hear more about what's known as the TransPerfect case right here. In studio, we have one of the co-founders and I don't know what you guys call yourselves, co-presidents or co-owners of TransPerfect. It's Philip Shaw. Thanks for being on.
You're very welcome. Co-CEO, co-president. Thank you so much, Rick, for having us here.
Okay.
Having me here.
Now, let me explain this, because what has happened is over the course of 2 years, there has been reported, and we're going to get the story from you, but what's been reported is so much animosity between you and your business partner that our Chancery Court judge said, you know what? You can't agree on who's going to buy the company or what's going to happen with the company. Screw you. I'm just going to take it and sell the whole thing. And now you've got like 4,000 employees, about 100 or so here in Delaware, right?
I don't know the exact number in Delaware, but we have 4,000 worldwide, yeah. 2,300 in the United States.
Yeah, and they're going like, whoa, if they just sell it, they'll sell it to somebody who's going to say, oh, now we need to be more cost effective because I invested maybe $1 billion into the company, and they're worried about their jobs. What they did along with the CFO and without you is they hired a PR firm and lawyers, and they're trying to get this thing turned around in the state legislature, which did not work out, I don't think. And you've hired Alan Dershowitz, who is one of the most famous constitutional lawyers. He's been on this this program many, many times because you think this could go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Is that right?
Well, I actually got to know Mr. Professor Dershowitz through a contest that we were running, which was going to shed light on this, on the aspects of this case that are that we believe are wrong, incorrect, unconstitutional. It was a zero witness case on the other side. A lot of the problems with the case, and Mr. Dershowitz, when he was Professor Dershowitz, when he was examining the case, was so appalled about what he read in the decision and the way that the trial process was run, that he actually was looking to have greater involvement, and he agreed to represent my mother. So actually my mother employs Alan Dershowitz. And when he was in the Supreme Court here in Delaware arguing, he was arguing on behalf of my mother.
And she is a 1% owner, is that correct?
She's a 1% owner, but if you value the company where I have at $600 million in the past, and this is public information, I've offered Liz $300 million for her half, then her share is worth $6 million. So whether it's one share, it's still a $600 million to a woman who's approximately, you know, is getting around 80 years old. So
it's pretty meaningful.
It's pretty meaningful to her.
Yeah.
She does not want to have it unconstitutionally ripped away from her in order to create a better exit strategy for Ms. Elting. And that is the real constitutional question at heart here is can the court, if Liz just sold her half upon wanting to exit, it would be worth a certain amount. If she can force me to sell my half and my mom to sell her shares at the same time, then half of the whole is worth more than her half. And that is really the crux of the case. She might only be able to get someone, if a company is worth $100, she might only be able to get somebody to pay $25 to step into her shoes. But if she can force the whole sale, she can get half of the whole, which would be $50. In that case, it could work out to hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's why there's all these attorney's fees, and that's what this case is really about. I know people have characterized it as War of the Roses.
Yeah.
But this case is about money. We broke up in 1997.
You were engaged, did not get married.
Engaged, did not get married. Had a wonderful relationship, started the business in 1997, worked through all those problems. When people tell the story, they tell it with a 20-year gap.
Yeah.
And in 20 years, we grew this company from a dorm room. And Liz took five or six years off, but I worked straight through running the business from a dorm room with two people to now it has 4,000 people. It has 100 offices in 30 countries worldwide, employs 4,000 people globally, and is and is really a juggernaut and a second leader in its industry.
So you started out just doing translation services.
Correct. Now we've diversified into, we have 30 different software products. We have a division that does legal and litigation and discovery services. I built an e-discovery company from scratch within the firm under my sections of the firm. We also handle services that I would say are value added for our customers. Whatever our customers are purchasing, such as large life sciences companies, we want to be providing value added services to those customers, such as technology which helps them organize the process for global drug studies.
Mm-hmm.
Very intensive, very document intensive, and translation intensive process. So we've definitely taken the translation business and sort of taken it to another level through expanding our different service offerings and becoming a more value-added partner with our clients.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Philip Shaw, co-founder, co-president, co-CEO of TransPerfect Services. And what's the full name of the company, actually? I would just call it TransPerfect.
The Delaware holding company is TransPerfect Global. The TransPerfect Translations International is the New York operating company, which makes up 99% of the company.
So what was it that actually brought you to court?
Well, I think what brought us to court was my partner was looking for, in 2012, she was looking for an exit strategy. And the exit strategy that we had always had a handshake agreement on and a negotiated agreement on was if one of us wanted to sell, we would go out and sell our shares in the open market.
No document, no paperwork.
And what we did have an operating agreement which said she would run these divisions, I would run these divisions. It worked out fine. It did not call for a buy-sell. She did not negotiate a buy-sell. She did not negotiate any mechanism in which the corporation would have to buy her shares back. So what she held was a non-controlling interest in an illiquid stock. And what I think is so dangerous about this decision is it basically prompts anyone who doesn't like their current deal to just go to court, say no to everything, stop people's raises, stop people's bonuses, which is what her and her attorneys did, decrease healthcare, create havoc within the firm, get some mad emails going back and forth, present a witnessless case to the judge. It's very, very important to understand that Ms. Elting won in a landslide without producing one witness out of 4,000. I had 10 witnesses testify, 43 witnesses waiting to testify.
Why do you think her argument was stronger to the judge than yours?
Well, that is a mystery, and a lot of people can draw their own conclusions to that fact. I can tell you I had every witness in the case, and so there wasn't a shred of evidence against me. It could be that there's a lot of relationships here in Delaware that go back a long way, and it could be that the credibility with which some of her attorneys testified, and in most courts, what an attorney says is not evidence, but it could be the attorneys representing Ms. Elting may have had incredible credibility with Chancellor Bouchard, because there were no fact witnesses. This is very important to understand. There were zero fact witnesses on the other side, non-party fact witnesses on the other side of this case.
What do you think they would have brought to the table? Because you make a big deal about that.
Talk to anybody at our company. I had 43 of them lined up to testify.
Yeah.
I had 600 of them write a letter to the judge saying I was an ethical businessman.
And you have so many of them who actually went and hired the two PR firms and lawyers to come out and say, hey, please don't break up the company like this.
Yeah, I've asked them to stop their effort because I think it detracts from my effort with the Delaware Supreme Court. I am actually... some of my attorneys and other people don't share the confidence that I have a lot of confidence that the Delaware Supreme Court is going to do the right thing here and understand that this was Bouchard's first big case. He went to the most extreme draconian decision of selling a private profitable corporation.
Out from its owners,
without trying anything first, sided with Ms. Elting on virtually every issue, 90% of the motions, even though these are supposed to be 50-50 shots. And so there was never any real opportunity to settle. So Ms. Elting just kind of dug her heels in, and I think the case was handled poorly from a judicial perspective in that regard, is that settlement wasn't really a possibility for me. I've made 22 settlement offers.
You, really?
Actually, 23 counting last week.
You most recently went to court on January 18. Is that right? On the 18th? And that was Delaware State Supreme Court. Has there been a determination yet issued by the court from that?
There hasn't been.
I don't think so.
They have a self-imposed rule of up to 90 days.
Yeah.
There's also a settlement conference coming up on the 7th. Very interested to see what happens in that case. That's in the lower court, in Bouchard's court. But the constitutional issues here at play are enormous, which is, can the government, in order to craft a better exit strategy for Liz Elting, can they force me and my mother to sell our shares? And basically, when we haven't signed any documents saying we would, like you do with a public company, can they force us to sell our shares just to make Liz Elting more money? And that is a constitutional question that is going to be very hard to answer. I understand if I buy a house in front of an airport, airport has to expand, the government may have to come in and sell my house. Now the government has said that in order to make Liz Elting more money, we're going to come in and not only we're going to sell your company, we're going to take it over and run it for a year. And this is a private profitable company that is the number two company in its sector and more profitable than anyone else in our
system. And when we talk about profitable, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm working off memory. I mean, I've read a lot of it. I'm familiar with a lot of it. But a few years ago, you're doing like $500,000 a year, and now it's projected to be making like over $1 billion a year within the next 2 to 4 years. Is that correct?
I mean, I think that's a little bit aggressive as far as we did.
But that's what's been reported, right?
Well, I guess I can't comment on reports. Okay. What I can comment on are on facts. This year we closed. We have incredible vision for the firm. The firm is the farthest thing from dysfunctional. In this year of I'll use Bouchard's word of dysfunction, we grew the company from $500 million to $545 million in revenue. In the year before that, we were 470. Right. Yeah. So in 2015 we were 470. In 2014 we grew during this litigation. We grew from 400 to $470 million. We are.
You're growing and you're doing well. Now, you can't hear the music playing, but I can. It means we got to take a break here. When we come back with Philip Shaw, what are the dollars? What is the big fight? Keep it here.
The Rick Jensen Show on 101.7 FM and 1150 AM WDEL.
This has got to be one of the most publicized chancery court cases, and one that could have a huge negative effect on Delaware, or maybe a positive effect on Delaware. It's called the TransPerfect case. They do translation services, and then through the years have grown to be doing more and more work through software, and they've got thousands of employees all around the world, about 4,000 or so. And as I understand it, at least 100 here in Delaware. Philip Shaw is co-founder, co-president, co-CEO. He's right here in the studio, and we're talking about this as he and his business partner, Elizabeth, right? Decided, look, I've had it with each other. We've had it. We're going to split it up. And there was a big argument as to valuation. Is that what she wanted? An exit strategy. You made an offer figuring the company's worth, about 500 to 600 million.
Well, let me just correct you on one thing. I never wanted to be a buyer or seller B.
Okay.
to paraphrase Ben Franklin.
Fair enough. You want to keep the company, keep it running.
I want to keep the company, keep it running, keep the jobs, keep the success of the business going. And the reason that the origin of this is Ms. Elting was looking for an exit strategy that is in excess of what she negotiated for.
Right. And they feel the company's worth a lot more than it really apparently is. Well, I've read that they think it's worth $1 billion right now. But your billing is like $546 million in the most recent fiscal year, right? So isn't the argument, how much are you going to give me? Isn't that really what it comes down to?
No, because then she would counter. I've made 22 offers and she hasn't countered. And not only that, and this is all public information. I want to stress that this has been public for a year.
Right.
I've offered her $300 million or I've offered her to turn the offer around or top me. So if it's really worth $1 billion, what I would say to Ms. Elting is, well, why don't you turn Mr. Shaw's offer around and just give him $300 million? And you know what we've heard from the other side? Crickets.
Yeah.
Nothing. Radio silence.
So,
not to make a pun that we're on the radio. But
you did a good one. That's fine.
but we've heard radio silence from the other side.
Yeah.
We cannot get a counteroffer. It's just continuing mudslinging, continuing litigation, and You know what? You know, at some point, we have to look at who wins in all this and why this is continuing and why the courts aren't driving settlement.
And meanwhile, it's the employees who are in limbo in a company that's very, very successful. You're making millions of dollars more and more and more each and every year. It's been portrayed as a failing company. It's been portrayed as an extraordinarily successful company.
It's extraordinarily successful by any measure, by any terms. It is not failing. I heard Mr. Coffin, Ms. Elty's attorney, call it a poisonous course. I don't know what world he's living in. I can show you footage from our recent senior manager meeting in Fort Lauderdale where we had a standing ovation. We have a clear vision for the future of the company. The company is moving forward. And the reason for this, you know, for judicial intervention in this company is based on the uncorroborated testimony of one witness, is just very, is beyond me. And I do believe that there should have been no judicial intervention. But now that there has been, I also am looking to settle a case.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the constitutionality after the news here. And the bottom line for Delaware is you have other corporations looking at this very, very carefully. And if they see that one of our judges can break up and sell a profitable company because two people have not yet come to an agreement on the value of the buyout, then that means you've got states like Nevada, Wisconsin, and others who say, you know what, we can do a better job. Let's take some of that money out of Delaware. More Mr. Shaw after this.
The Rick Jensen Show on 101.7 FM and 1150 AM WDEL.
So if you have a question or comment about this TransPerfect case, which can really affect Delaware, bring it, 302-478-9335. I don't expect a lot of calls because, quite honestly, this is pretty technical stuff. And I don't expect someone other than an Alan Dershowitz or any lawyers that might be involved with this to really have a take on the legal aspects of the TransPerfect case. But I think you've got sorry about that. I just kicked Philip Shaw over here, co-founder, co-owner, co-president, and co-CEO. But I think the synopsis is pretty succinct. You built this great company. The two of you, she's looking for an exit strategy. You've made offers. She has not accepted any of those 22 or 23 offers. And the judge said, I'm sick and tired of this. I'm going to tell her that, yes, you just sell the whole company if just one person does not agree. Now, let me ask you this, Mr. Shaw. After 2 years, you can't come to agreement, or she refuses to come to agreement, however it's framed. And Colin Benigni, state senator, was looking to introduce legislation that would allow a chancery court to say, look, we're going to have a 3-year pause here. As long as the company is profitable, and yours obviously has continued to be profitable even through all of this. And do you really think that within or at the end of those 3 years, anything would change?
I guess let me be clear. I disagree entirely with the Citizens for Broke Business Delaware on the 3-year waiting period issue. I believe to take someone's property is unconstitutional mm-hmm. for a non-public purpose or a non-public use. And we said it before. So if we want to distill down what this case is to its simplest form and take some questions on it, is should the government be able to force me and my elderly mother to sell our stock at the same time just to make Liz Elting more money? Liz Elting makes an incredible amount of money being 50% owner right now. My mom and I don't want to sell her stock. And should he be able to cleave that ownership? And the Constitution clearly says no. So I don't care if it's a 3-year waiting period or a 10-year waiting period. What I think the court should potentially have done in this situation is put a custodian in charge to let Ms. Elting sell her shares, which is all she is entitled to, so and oversee the sale of her 50%. That was one option. And another option that the court could do is simply order the parties, and this is in our bylaws, and it would have created no controversy, order the parties and their law firms to pick a neutral to be the third director. Case over. And I have to tell you, this was, and as you know the procedural history, this was adjudicated by the most experienced judge in New York Superior Court, New York Supreme Court, Commercial Division, Justice Melvin Schweitzer. And it was basically, threw it out in an afternoon.
Yeah.
Ms. Elting did not negotiate an exit strategy for herself, and it is not the court's purpose there's a case that even says this, it's not the court's purpose to get in between the Gordian knot between buyer and seller and and create an exit strategy for someone that they did not or a contract that they did not negotiate for themselves or that they don't like.
And that's key right there. That is key because, as I've heard from others, when the court starts doing this, it gives the opportunity to other states to say, well, look, we have a great chancery court. We have a great incorporation laws. Delaware doesn't need this $600-700 million a year in fees and to keep their state going. We can take a lot of that money. And that's the thing that actually concerns me.
I mentioned before when we started the show, I think this is hugely important for the Delaware people because it's such a large part of your economy. Obviously, I care near and dear to my heart of the lives of my 4,000 employees that I do not want to see turned upside down any more than they already have been by the Chancery Court. And there's just greater interest for American business in that we need constitutional, state, and steady laws and applications of those laws. And I think that this decision falls out of bounds of all three of those constituencies.
Yeah.
And it's
we have a situation here where we are hundreds of millions of dollars underwater when it comes to our budget, and they're considering a 1% addition to the transfer tax. That's going to be horrible for anybody who's buying their first or second house. And it's going to put a real damper on the real estate business. It's huge taxes. And now, if we were to lose this, or a big chunk of this, 1%, 2%, 3% of this, we're talking millions and millions of dollars more. I want to get to the phones here. So Philip Shaw, co-founder and co-CEO of TransPerfect Global, is here in the studio, the Rick Jensen Show. Why don't you get your headphones on, and this way you can hear what people are saying. I don't expect you to know exactly how we do things in here. Like, I would have no idea what to do at your office. Let's get to Aaron, who's driving in Dover. Aaron, you are on the Rick Jensen Show with Philip Shaw.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Excellent.
So my question, or kind of statement, I guess, isn't going to be just fully specific to this case, but, Rick, you touched on something that I think is so important and that so many people in Delaware don't realize, which is if we lose any more, really, of our incorporation business, it is going to just hit our state so hard financially. I used to work in corporation services and help companies become incorporated. And then, so anytime that your company is incorporated in Delaware, anything that company do, things have to go through Delaware also. So, you get a lot of fees and things like that, to your point. Well, Nevada simply just copied our laws, and it's been our chancery court system that has kept so much business and kept the incorporation services here. A lot of people think it's our taxes, this is that. It's actually, we are not the cheapest place to incorporate a business.
So when you hear I'm going to interrupt you a little bit, Aaron, and I appreciate your knowledge and experience here. So when you hear a case like this, what are you thinking?
I think it's such a slippery slope, and I think that, Delaware really as a whole to kind of start looking at all of the court decisions that are being made, because it doesn't take much to turn people away. And our chancery court is, to me, one of the last things that we really have that separates us, such a small state, from everybody else within the country. But having that, we need to be making solid constitutional decisions, not more kind of personal subjective decision.
Yeah, no, I get it. And that's the sense I'm getting as well. I'm going to put a call in to see if I can get Professor Dershowitz on, because I've talked to him before. He's always a great interview, and you got to listen closely to the words he uses. Aaron, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care. 302-478-9335. Yeah, Philip.
No, I was just going to thank Aaron for a comment. I do think that it's important to understand, why did I incorporate in Delaware? I grew up in Maryland. I did go to Rehoboth Beach for summers, but it's not that my love for Rehoboth Beach that made me incorporate in Delaware. It's because when I was in business school at NYU, they taught me that Delaware is a place that has the oldest laws in the country, the ones that follow the Constitution the most, the ones that the most rational business decision-making laws, good for corporations, good for shareholders, fair, a bastion of fairness, a bastion of impartiality, nowhere near no biased decisions coming out of Delaware. This was one of the reasons that prompted me in 2007 when we reorganized our New York corporation, and we had to find a headquarter for it. Is I remembered these business school teachings,
yeah,
and that's what brought me to Delaware, is to get a fair shake. And to be honest with you, anyone that reads this transcript and reads this trial record would have a hard time really saying that either I or TransPerfect got a fair shake in this.
Yeah. Let's get to State Senator Colin Bonini, a Republican, ran for governor. And Colin, thanks for being on. You tried to push through this legislation that actually Mr. Shaw says, no, don't want it, don't need it. But tell us about the legislation and why you thought it would be helpful.
Well, Rick, as you know, I'm quite used to pushing legislation that people don't agree with.
True, yeah.
But I've been listening to Mr. Shaw said. He explained the case so much better than I ever could. So let me just say, first of all, just from the perspective of the specifics of the TransPerfect case, I agree with Mr. Shaw. I'm no corporate lawyer, but I have read pretty much every document that's been produced publicly about the TransPerfect case, and I just think Judge Bouchard is wrong. I mean, I just disagree. I think he's wrong. And by the way, in America, you're allowed to disagree with the guys wearing, I guess in this case, gray robes.
But well, yeah, but
black robes. So, I mean, I think he's wrong. And I also think, Rick, that I'll answer your question specifically about the specific legislation, but I also think the overall point, and I think the caller did a nice job as well, that this has very significant, potentially very significant consequences for Delaware. And, you know, and regardless of whether you agree or disagree with Mr. Shaw's side of the case or even the TransPerfect employees, you know, regardless of all of that, and I happen to agree with him. I think Judge Bouchard is wrong. I just don't know how to say it as more clearly as I can.
No, but I want to interrupt here because that's unusual for a state lawmaker to do that. It has been for many, many years, you have especially state lawmakers who are very uncomfortable with criticizing our Chancery Court and state Supreme Court justices.
Well, I mean, and I think that's unhealthy. Quite frankly, and I think it's okay to say, hey, we disagree, right? That's actually what's American. In fact, one of the things that sort of bothered me, my apologies, Rick, I know you and I have talked about this before, and I apologize if I'm cutting off Mr. Shaw, is that one of the things that bothered me is the custodian issued basically a gag order or tried to issue a gag order to the employees of TransPerfect. And that really bothered me. Regardless, again, whatever you think of the merits for the case on either side or not, that really bothered me because, you know, this is America. But the consequences for Delaware are potentially quite real. I happen to think, by the way, that they can be very positive. They can be real in a very positive way too, but as Mr. Shaw did a much better job than I could explain.
Well, let me dial this down then, okay? So how do you feel that this could come out and be a positive for Delaware?
Because I think if, whether it's my legislation or whether it's whatever the adjustments that are eventually made, hopefully through the regular process of the Bar Association reviewing things and bringing amendments to the code, they bring a bill every year that amends this section of the code all the time. Whether it's in my particular legislation or through that process, if we account for the difficulties that the TransPerfect case has brought to the to the fore, I think that sends a very positive message, actually, to the international and national business community, saying, hey, Delaware is flexible enough to say, okay, these are different, these are the circumstances that we perhaps didn't anticipate, and we're going to be adjustable enough, and we're going to be flexible enough to allow for those different circumstances as they come. And I actually think that could reflect very positively on
Colin.
Delaware.
Gotcha. Now, you are introducing this legislation that would add to the code a 3-year wait for, yes, a company that's profitable, et cetera. You didn't have the votes for it, is what I heard. And something else occurred. The Delaware Bar Association said, you know what, we should consider that. So you withdrew the legislation, and now you feel it's a positive thing. Why?
Well, I think it's a positive thing in that you know, every year, by the way, I mean, I think every year we amend the code and change the corporation law in Delaware. We do that every year. These are enormous 60-page, 70-page, .02 font legalese bill every year.
Yeah.
Right. And they come, but they come to us every year, and the corporate section of the Bar Association has reviewed these bills, has put them through a regular, rigorous process of making sure that these are positive things to keep Delaware, quite frankly, on top, on all of these issues. And I think incorporating the concerns that the Trans Perfect case has created into that process that, hey, the folks who we amend this every year and getting Trans Perfect's profile up to the point where, hey, let's look at this. This really is something worth looking at.
So that is a positive in that they are.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think that's a positive. And by the way, the 3-year waiting period is one, certainly one idea. But I think, and Mr. Shaw said this earlier in the show, my concern, Rick, I mean, I just to repeat, I met with I realize they're completely separate entities and they disagree on a lot of stuff with Mr. Shaw and the employees group. But I met with the employees group, quite frankly, ready to tell them, you know, hey, don't mess with Chancery Court. This is, you know.
Right.
But I gave them the time and listening and to say, wait, and I got to be honest. I read all the stuff. And Rick, after reading all the stuff, I was like, you know what? The Chancery Court went from, you know, hey, there's a conflict to selling the company. Right. and out from under the owners. And,
right.
and my point is, and I think the General Assembly is perfectly legitimate in from a policy perspective to get involved. My point is to say we need to give Chancery Court, we need to give whoever is involved in this more options. And Mr. Shaw talked about a couple as well.
Yeah, and that was the goal, to give it more options. Colin, I appreciate the call. We're out of time. We have to get to a break. OK.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, State Senator Colin Bonini. And Phil, I know you have a response to that, right?
I did want to say to Colin, if I think he's as far as disagreement, if two people disagree, one of them is redundant. I think I'm quoting Wrigley, the chewing gum king, king from Chicago, when I say that. So I don't have a problem with people disagreeing, and I don't think people should be afraid to. I think sometimes in Delaware, because the justices are appointed for, or the chancery courts are appointed for 12 years, you won't find a lot of lawyers that want to disagree with them because they have to go in front of them for another 11 years. But I do appreciate Colin's honesty and courage. And I also, while I disagree with 3 years, as I think any taking is unconstitutional, I think something is better than nothing.
So when we come back with Philip Shaw, co-founder, co-CEO of Trans Perfect Global, what would be the best outcome? And how long can this disagreement go on? It's the Rick Jensen Show. Keep it here. In studio, Philip Shaw, co-founder, co-owner, TransPerfect Global. It's a huge case, and, it went from the Chancery Court, State Supreme Court, maybe now, maybe even the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll see what the decision is from their recent court hearing on January the 18th, right? So you and your partner in the business just can't seem to come to an agreement. You've said you've made like 23 different offers. She won't even accept or negotiate any of them and everything. And of course, we talked about how this can affect Delaware as other states look at this and say, oh, we could do a better job. We'll be cleaner. Come incorporate that and we'll take your millions of dollars. And now Delaware could potentially lose millions of dollars in incorporation fees and things like that. What do you want folks in Delaware to know about this case?
Well, what I want them to know about this case is that it is, regardless of what they've read in the press, it is an unprecedented case to have boardroom squabbles result in the sale of a private profitable company. And to a lot of people, a sale might seem like, oh, it's just a sale. It doesn't seem like a big deal. But in the case of a people business like TransPerfect, with 4,000 people in operations in 30 countries, in 100 offices, a sale of this company where people have now had to live not knowing who their boss is going to be and not knowing what their future looks like because of the cloud that government intervention has put over this company is just not just. And another thing I would like people to understand is that the expense involved in litigation that is supposed to help the company, right? When you incorporate in Delaware, Chancellor Bouchard, everyone that's in the Delaware judiciary has a sworn duty to protect Delaware companies. This corporation has had to spend, Liz has had to spend $30 million. I've had to spend $30 million in counting. The custodian spent $15 million between him and his a cadre of consultants that he's hired virtually, you know, Houlihan Lokey, Alvarez and Marcel, Grant Thornton, Connor Group, like he's hired, you know,
we don't have time for the entire list of lawyers. I know it's huge. So it's like over 10% of the value of the business, right?
Those are all the custodians vendors. So I'm saying over 10% of the value of the business has been basically disintegrated. And what is, and it's pre-appeal. Even if the corporation and I or my position wins on appeal that Ms. Elton can only sell her own shares, I don't know how we're getting that $15 million back.
We got 45 seconds left. So, Philip Shaw, what's the happy ending? What would be your happy ending?
I'll make my own question. Why am I fighting this fight? I'm fighting this fight for the people of TransPerfect. Like, we have promised them a platform in which they can succeed more and more every year as long as the business succeeds. And I know, as the head of TransPerfect, as I have been from 2 people to 4,000 people, that I will keep that platform going. And for the stability of the company and for the stability of the families that are at stake, that is the reason that I am fighting this battle.
Thank you, Philip Shaw, co-founder, co-CEO, TransPerfect Global.